That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and him, the beast from the east of Sussex, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, with all the short pods we did over Christmas, I can't remember whether we said Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, have a lovely Easter, welcome to Vaccination Day. I'm not entirely sure where I am. The only thing I do know is that two middle-aged men shouldn't have taken a 10-day break from the equipment, because I had to get Ali in to help me remind me how to work it.
Yeah, I've realised that the recording this podcast was the only constant in my life in 2020, and trying to work out the day of the week during between Christmas and New Year was an impossible task, far beyond me. And I was just kept looking at my watch and getting very dazed and confused on a regular basis.
Yeah, you haven't even got alcohol to as an excuse for that. And also, I'll let the listeners into a little secret here, Kieran. That was our fourth restart for various technical reasons, which is why you didn't laugh at the Beast from the East joke. The first two times you thought the Beast from the East of Sussex was very funny, but second, also, this is a happy time of year for you, Kieran, whereas I'm Mr. Christmas and I get very upset when it's over. You can't wait for it to finish, can you, you big old Grinch?
No, I am right misery guts over Christmas, mainly because it always coincides with me marking exams. So I've worked every single day, including Christmas Day. So everybody else is having a great time, and I'm sitting there going, "Oh, this is a pile of shite that I'm marking here. Oh, this one's good." Grumbling away, being very bad tempered indeed.
Yeah, Kieran, as an ex employee of the London Ambulance Service, I feel bound to point out that marking exams hardly makes you the fourth emergency service, Kieran. Come now, you're warm and dry. You're sitting by your lovely log fire, tucking into your pheasant, while the Baroness darned your Christmas jumper. I've got a very fixed image of what Christmas is like in your house, Kieran. Now, for all those of you who complained, by the way, about our bite-sized pod over the holidays,
they did, didn't they? I was amazed.
Yes, they did. Which I'm taking to believe that they missed us, rather than they thought that we were lazy sods who couldn't be asked to get up on Christmas Day and do a pod for them all. Happy New Year, everybody! But don't worry, you've got a big dinner coming up today. You've got a big post Christmas dinner because it's Questions Day, I believe. It will take me a couple of weeks to get back into the routine, but there are, of course, some news stories to catch up on, and the first one is almost the last story we spoke about just before Christmas. And it's a Happy New Year for lawyers in Madrid, Kieran.
It is, yes. This relates to Kieran Trippier, who was given a significant ban by the English Football Association with regards to gambling issues. Now, whether it's the release of information to betting companies, but he clearly, as far as the FA were concerned, he breached some of the rules. He was given around about a 10-week ban, which I think covered 12 games, which is pretty severe. Mm. And that's global. So it impacted upon his ability to play for Atletico. But Atletico, clearly very unhappy about this. And they have they've managed to get an injunction from FIFA. So presumably the lawyers will be charging double or treble time over Christmas, have managed to persuade FIFA to go along with this. And it's going to eventually be decided by the Court for Arbitration for Sport. So Kieran Trippier, yeah, excellent player, as I think everybody knows, has made a very good impact at Madrid. And they've got some big, big matches coming up. You know, they've, for example, the I think they've got Chelsea in the next round of the Champions League. Some fairly significant matches in La Liga as well. And they don't want to lose him. So that they feel that he's being harshly treated. So this one's going to run and run for a while. How long it will take the Court for Arbitration for Sport to get around to judging this, we're not sure. Normally, they prioritise what they consider to be big, big cases. And that's why the Manchester City case was dealt with relatively quickly last year. But I think this one will be less significant to them. And I would always encourage people to take a look at their website. It is fascinating if you're interested in this. And they go across the whole range of sports. So whether Trippier will be high on the list of priorities, I'm not so sure.
I can sort of see the logic from Atletico Madrid in insisting that if the English FA want to ban Kieran Trippier, then it should be from English football, and any ban should take place as and when he goes back to an English club. And it would be a typically Palace thing to do, to sign a player who had a 12-week ban coming up. But I presume that would be the basis of their injunction, really, that the Atletico Madrid and the Spanish FA have taken no action, have not investigated him. So why should he be banned from Spanish football?
I think it'll be a contributory factor that they might also believe that he was harshly treated by the English FA and not given a fair hearing, given that the adjudication would have taken place over Zoom, and you know, perhaps they weren't allowed to get as involved with the defence of their employee, their player, as much as they wished to.
Yeah, and as we've learned this morning, Kieran, if that adjudication was taking place over Zoom with two middle-aged men, it could have been chaos. They could have completely banned the wrong player, couldn't they? Late Christmas presents for Christmas presents. That's how I think of it, Kieran. Christmas present. Late Christmas presents for Burnley fans and Sunderland fans.
Well, certainly for Burnley fans, the takeover from AL Capital has gone through. I think it's cost them around about £200 million. And to show you sort of an indication of inflation in football, Liverpool were acquired for £300 million wow. Only a decade ago. And no disrespect for Burnley, but you know, I think Liverpool are probably worth more than one and a half times of Burnley's value. In my view, Burnley are probably the best run club financially in the Premier League. So the good news for their new owners is that in terms of issues such as financial fair play, they've got huge amounts of wiggle room because Burnley make a profit every year, and therefore, in theory, they can spend as much money as they want. However, I mean, this company, ALK Capital, these are American investors, and they will be looking for a return on their investment, and that return presumably will be financially. Burnley have probably suffered a little bit less than most of the clubs in the Premier League due to COVID, because they've got the ground with, I think it's the smallest capacity. I think Turf Moor is around about 21,500. Also, you know, it's not a hugely wealthy area, so the club have always priced tickets at reasonable levels to make them affordable to the local fan base. So they don't generate a lot of money coming in. It's only about 4.5% of their total comes through the turnstiles. So the new owners, no clubs having a good time at present due to COVID. But compared to many industries, I think football in the Premier League is less worse off than others. What was also interesting yesterday, and by yesterday I mean I think that would be in the 2nd of January, was it looks as if the new owners have got some form of borrowing arrangement with Michael Dell's company, MSD Holdings. Now, they've also lent to Derby and Southampton. That they appear to be trying to build themselves a profile in English football in terms of lending to football clubs. And as we've said before, traditional banks are a bit loath to get involved with football, because if they do lend and they ask for the money back at some point and the football club can't afford it, it can make the local branch manager very unpopular in that town or city.
Yeah, Kieran, can I just interrupt you there just to point out that you got 8 minutes and 21 seconds into the new year before mentioning Derby. So somebody's won a lot of money ongoing early. Now, you mentioned, before we move on to Sunderland, you mentioned this financial fair play wiggle room for Burnley. Would that have come as a pleasant surprise for the new owners, or would they have been looking for a Premier League club that had the potential for them to spend big without breaching any rules?
It would have been a consideration when they were deciding how much money, A, to spend buying the club, and B, in terms of setting a budget for Sean Dyche in January. It could be that this relationship they've now got with MSD Holdings is effectively the transfer kitty for Sean Dyche for the upcoming window. You know, Burnley, they are in the bottom six. They've only scored 9 goals in their first 15 games. So I think there is room for change. They certainly didn't spend any money in the last transfer window. So the capacity is there. And I'm sure that they would have much preferred to be in that position to acquiring a club where they would have to sell before they could buy. So they're in a very flexible position in terms of their capabilities. So and they're certainly further down the road than Sunderland, because although my understanding is Sunderland have agreed in principle to sell to this guy based in Monaco, but he's not yet passed the owners and directors tests, and that has dragged on occasions in respect of EFL takeovers.
Yeah, this is the guy that's only 22, I believe, the front man for this consortium. Is that right?
That's right. Is it Kirill Dreyfus or something of that nature? I think he comes from a very wealthy family. I think his family have formerly owned clubs in France, and he now wants to get involved. You know, Sunderland, you can't get more of a sleeping giant in the lower leagues than that club. So again, there is scope to do things. Although he will be taking over a club which has the challenges of the salary cap that you have in League One. So if he does manage to get this over the line in the next couple of weeks, it's good news. I think the Stuart Donald ownership has turned toxic, but it won't be a case of, you know, those Mbappe to Wearside rumours. I think they will have to be put on hold just yet, because they will be restricted by the salary cap.
You know what football fans are like. They'll still go with the rumours. Just briefly on Burnley, you mentioned transfer funds for Sean Dyche. You're fairly convinced that Sean Dyche is conditional in this takeover, that they very keen for him to stay, which is slightly unusual, isn't it, in a multi-million pound takeover?
I mean, Sean Dyche, within football, I do work for the LMA and other bits and bobs within football itself. He is held in huge regard, and I don't think he necessarily gets the credit that he deserves from football fans, because his accent is buzz cut, is thick set, but he's very articulate. He is actually very progressive in terms of his coaching manner and style. I don't think that the new owners want to upset the apple cart. So they were very keen that Sean Dyche was reassured that this takeover does not put his position into question.
He also has the firmest handshake in football. I can testify that, and a very piercing gaze, which really makes you make sure that your questions are interesting ones before you ask them. Talking of wealthy families, Chelsea have put out their latest figures, Kieran. I imagine that was you tucked under the spreadsheet by the cosy fire with the chestnuts over Christmas, wasn't it?
Well, when I saw the announcement, which came out at 5 p.m. on New Year's Eve, I thought, that's it. Yeah, that's my New Year's party sorted. I got quite giddy. But it didn't turn out to be quite as it was meant to be, because they didn't actually publish their accounts. Instead, they stuck out a one-page press release. Now what you get here is a selective figures. It's a greatest hits version. So they said, well, revenue's down £40 million, and they broke that down. And yeah, that's broadly what you'd expect. And then they said, oh, but we've made a profit of £32 million. And you're thinking, oh, Christ, that's impressive, because Spurs have made a loss and Manchester United have made a loss. But And I know this is me being very fussy. They've not defined the word profit. And the thing is, if you ask an accountant what is profit, that they normally sort of, you know, pull down the blinds, screen the room, and say, well, what do you want it to be? You know, there are seven or eight different definitions of profit.
Yeah.
So I went into Chelsea's 2019 accounts and into the small print there. And yes, if they've made a £32 million profit from day-to-day activities, that's great. But in the 2019 figures, one of the last things they said, oh, by the way, we've sold £115 million worth of players in 2020. Now, if that's all profit, it means actually sort of on an operational level, it's been a really tough year for them. Now, you know, Chelsea are very, very smart when it comes to player sales. You know, people always point to the amount of money that Abramovich spends on players, but in each of the last five seasons, I think they've had the highest sales income from player sales. So they do have a very interesting business model, and that's partly due to the fact that Stamford Bridge has got low capacity. If you compare it to the rest of the big six, you've got Manchester United 76,000, Liverpool now 54, they want to go to 60, you've got City at mid-50s, and you've got Spurs and Arsenal at over 60,000. Stamford Bridge has only got 40,000, 41,000 capacity, and therefore they need to sell players to make up that shortfall, but they are very smart at it.
Mm. And also, Kieran, with the new numbers, is the Football Association of Ireland.
Yes. Now, the one thing that I did get very excited about over Christmas was the Baroness kindly got me a book called Champagne Football, which is all about the reign of terror of the former chief of Irish football, John Delaney. And even if you're not interested in Irish football, this is an absolutely fascinating read. I'd say it's almost as good as your book, Kevin. Yeah, and that's
high praise.
That's a pretty high watermark. Looking at Irish football, these are the figures for 2019. So this is pre-COVID. They're losing 100,000 a week.
Wow.
Which isn't good pre-COVID. They've had to go to FIFA to borrow money. They've had to go to the Irish government to borrow money. There are huge issues in terms of this guy, John Delaney. I think they agreed a final settlement for him by sticking about €350,000 into his pension pot. And there's various things which have come out in terms of the unusual relationship the FAI, the Football Association of Ireland, have with FIFA. I'm sure you can remember the infamous Thierry Henry handball issue, where he effectively turned into a basketball player in the playoffs. I think this was 2010. Mm-hmm. And the Irish FA threatened to take FIFA to court over this, and that potentially would have delayed I think it was the World Cup in 2012. The 2010. And they played hardball, and it turns out that FIFA gave them a mysterious $5 million loan, which then FIFA decided to write off. Now, you know, it's a bit like your bank manager phoning you up, Kevin, and say, yeah, by the way, don't worry about the credit cards. Don't worry about the mortgage. We're just going to write it off. You know, this is indicative of how clandestine some of the activities of the rulers of football are. That, you know, we're talking huge sums of money exchanging hands and then just mysteriously being written off in such a way. It does make you feel more and more uncomfortable about the governance of the game globally.
It's a nice parallel with my bank manager, Kieran, but my bank manager tends to get changed every 3 months because they don't think it's fair that anybody should have to look after me for more than 3 months. Like so many of our forebears, Kieran, let's cross the sea from Ireland to the USA.
Very good.
I feel a song coming on. The MLS has told the Players Association it will invoke a force majeure clause as it tries to reduce wages. Now, force majeure is also how insurers get out of paying things, isn't it?
Yes, force majeure is where you say that there are extraordinary events or circumstances which allows one of the parties to alter their contractual commitments. And the thing about the MLS, and it's alien to us here in the UK, is that there's a collective bargaining agreement between the players' union and the owners. So, you know, we've seen here, we've got the PFA, but they don't act on concert. You know, they don't organise wages on an individual basis for players. They simply sort of, you know, they look after sort of the general issues. But in the US, what happened was when COVID originally arrived, the MLSPA, the Players Association, they agreed for effectively a global 7.5% pay cut for all of their players. Mm. They had all of the bonuses capped, and you know, it was. Then they had this restart. The owners say we've lost so much money that 7.5% pay cut isn't enough. And they're trying to invoke this force majeure clause to put through further pay cuts. So this has ended up we now got a confrontational position between the Players Association and the club owners. And under these circumstances, of course, the only winners will be the lawyers.
Mm. It's difficult to compare, Kieran, but I'm guessing MLS wages would be a lot less than Premier League wages, for example.
Yes, they are significantly lower, although there are sort of effectively you've got a wage cap, mm. but there are exceptions for star players. So when David Beckham went across to LA, was it LA Galaxy he played for?
Yeah.
Then they were able to invoke, well, his wages don't count towards the overall wage cap and things of this nature. But in general, the wages, they're certainly not at Premier League level. I suspect they're not even at Championship level, but you know, they're for if you compare that to continental Europe, it'd still be appealing for some of the smaller countries for players to go there. Although, there are quite strict restrictions. In terms of whether you qualify to go to the MLS or not, because they want to develop local talent.
Yeah, on a similar note, Kieran, our last news story probably won't come as news to many people. Cardiff manager Neil Harris says that a number of EFL clubs are struggling to pay wages.
Yes, you know, I think Neil's had a bit of a rough time recently at Cardiff in terms of results and... so therefore, of course, you get asked the questions, are you going to be spending lots of money in January? And he says, well, hold on, you know, the focus of clubs, especially in the Championship, because remember, in the Championship, they've not agreed a wage cap.
Yeah.
It is that some clubs are in that division are struggling to pay wages. He was sort of inferring that perhaps at some clubs, full wages haven't been paid. Of course, we have seen the situation at Sheffield Wednesday, where they capped the wages at £7,000, I think it was £7,000 a month for their squad. There have been delays. The owner of Sheffield Wednesday, Delphon Shansiri, he said that the most recent wages now have been fully paid, but he was inferring, and hats off to him for being honest, that he can't make that guarantee in the future. But that's the case, I think, for all the owners in the Championship. Yeah. They've got no money coming in through the turnstiles. Yes, they have had advances. There is an arrangement with the Premier League, but that's to focus on PAYE and National Insurance. So it's indicative of how tough things are. I mean, I'm personally amazed that we've got this far with so few clubs having to, managing to pay the wages in full, unless these things are going under the radar and the players don't want to articulate exactly what's happening.
Yeah, God willing, with the vaccine, it'll only be 2 or 3 months before we begin to find out the truth, and hopefully wages will start to be paid. I do like it when a manager like Neil Harris plays diversionary tactics. So it's like when Sam Allardyce, his first statement after West Brom lost 5-0 at home to Leeds was, we need a COVID firebreak. And it's like, have any of your players out with COVID? That's beside the point. What we need is a 2-week firebreak where I can get some training into my players. Now, Kieran.
Yeah, he's 66. He's saying, I'm 66. I'm worried about catching COVID. And that's perfectly understandable But if you're 66, then you don't accept a job on the 16th of December whilst COVID cases are increasing. So as you say, classic Sam diversionary tactics. He didn't say the same thing 3 days previous when West Brom had drawn 1-1 at Anfield.
See, that's, again, Kieran, it's an indication of how long we've been married that you answered a question I was about to ask you. That's very good. Well done. On to questions, Kieran. And I'm aware, dear listeners, and you are, all of you, dear listeners, that the Free Kings are still following yonder star through field and fountain, moor and mountain. So for some of you, the holidays continue and you may still be playing the Price of Football drinking game. If so, get ready, because there's a Now Kieran coming up. And I know that's one of your favourites. Most of the drinking games, the phrases that Kieran originates, but Now Kieran. I love the questions we get, Kieran. I generally really am intrigued and fascinated by the questions we get from all over the world, covering a range of topics from impending financial disaster to this, our first question of 2021, which comes from Mark Ridley. And Mark Ridley's question is quite straightforward. How much does it cost to place an advertising hoarding on the perimeter of a pitch? Not an electronic one with a running dash hound, but a lower league club. That really needs the words, just asking for a friend, doesn't it? Either that or Mark Ridley got an advertising token for Christmas and doesn't know. So, yes, of all the questions we could have started 2021, we've said, how much? And I'm sorry I said that in a South London accent, but basically that was a very South London question. That's the sort of question where you take a fag out of the corner of your mouth and say, how much does it cost to place an advertising hoarding around your pitch? I don't want a running dachshund or anything, just a straightforward cardboard one. How much does that cost him? So how much is it going to set him back? Because obviously he's set up a new business and wants to advertise it.
Well, unfortunately, the answer is it depends. I have asked one or two people at clubs, and they've been a bit coy. They didn't want to give the game away, and yeah, and we would of course have anonymized it. All that I understand is that in the Premier League, speaking to one club that was recently promoted, they said they can now charge 10 to 12 times the amount that they were charging in the Championship.
Oh wow, really?
And that's for their own adverts. It's not that the Premier League do sell some of the adverts, but what you have to do is that when you get to the Premier League, one of the upgrades that all clubs are required to do the first time they get to the Premier League is to agree to these LED adverts, because they're actually sold in 30-second slots.
Oh,
So you, and if you're looking, yeah, you got the matches taking place, and you will see those adverts changing on a regular basis. And the amount that's charged actually varies depending upon the opposition. So if Palace are at home to Burnley, to mention a club that we've already covered, then you know they wouldn't be able to get the same amount as when they're hosting Manchester United or Liverpool, because especially in the international markets, and remember, and that's why we see so many of these adverts advertising international products or companies from overseas, it is targeting domestic markets. And I've even seen now the advertisers are so clever that the billboards which are the LED will show different adverts for different countries. So if you're watching the match in Hong Kong, you will see different adverts to the ones that you are physically seeing at Selhurst. So there's a lot of technology now going into this. But in terms of Mark's question, for the lower league clubs, it will depend upon whether or not the advertising hoardings are camera facing, because matches are taking place behind closed doors, so there's no point in the adverts. But of course, we do have the EFL's iFollow service, so fans will be able to watch matches. When I did speak to somebody, he did say effectively, whatever we're offered, we're inclined to take at present, because it's a buyer's market. We've not got fans at the ground. The numbers for iFollow aren't brilliant, and therefore they tend to have the advertising arrangements on longer term deals, because of course you need a sign writer to create the sort of the the wooden adverts or the metal adverts that go around the perimeter of the pitch. And I think we're probably talking, you can get one, we're talking hundreds of pounds, not, you know, thousands or tens of thousands.
This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager, or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Yeah, I missed the days when an advert for the best shirts in Croydon was at Sellers Park for about 25 years and was still in pound, shilling and pence some decades after we went this. You've really confused me now as well by saying different countries can have different... I'm still baffled by whether the words on a cricket pitch are actually on the cricket pitch or on the TV screen. So now the idea that somebody in Hong Kong is seeing a different advert to somebody in America is very bizarre. And I think you've answered this question before, Kieran, but we've done 110 pods in 2020 alone, and I had a lot of Calvados over Christmas. But does it work like TV advertising? Are advertising agencies phoning the clubs up individually and offering them adverts, or is there a central agency that's just sort of distributing adverts to clubs via the Premier League?
There's both. The Premier League does have some central agreements, and that money is shared evenly between all 20 clubs. But the clubs are also entitled to do their own arrangements because they might have, some of their personal sponsors will be saying, well, we want to do perimeter advertising for the club. And also, of course, you've got some perhaps slightly more local advertisements as well. So it's a combination. Because they're sold in these 30-second slots, it allows the clubs to mix and match.
Mm. Okay, a second question of 2021, and I like saying 2021 just for the moment, until it turns out that ironically 2021 is worse than 2020, I'm going to enjoy saying 2021. But it comes from Gareth Ludlow, and Gareth says, with West Ham paying off Jack Wilshere by allegedly giving him 85% of his remaining contract, what is the real saving there? It seems that they'd be better keeping him when the saving is so small, but are there other hidden savings such as insurances, bonuses, etc.?
First of all, it frees up a squad place. It frees up a place in the car park. Yeah, if you're being crude about it. And I know I do not want, because I've seen Jack Wilshere on his day, and he's a fantastic player. It frees up a space in the physio's room. So therefore, you are going to be saving money on benefits, for health, for physio, if there's a company-sponsored car and things of that nature. It does the club no favours to have a player who is on a long-term injury, who's clearly unhappy, and that's just sort of, it's not good for the general karma around the club. But yeah, the players are sympathetic, there's no doubt about it, but there's only so many times you can say to somebody, yeah, how are you progressing with recovery,
yeah,
things of this nature, and it just makes things a bit awkward. So it allows the club to get with certainty, and also means that presumably win bonuses and cup winning bonuses, and you know, they know exactly what's going out in terms of Jack Wilshere's contract. The downside for them is that if they were hoping to get any form of transfer fee for him in the January market, clearly that's not going to be the case. Although I think they would have struggled given his sad injury history in recent years. So they've gone down one particular route. At the same time, we've seen Manchester United go down the opposite route. They've got Jesse Lingard, and I can't remember the last time he played a Premier League game. His contract expires in 6 months, and Manchester United have just extended his contract so that they could have paid him up in January. They've just given him an extra 12 months because they're hoping to get either a loan fee or a transfer fee for him in January. And as we've seen with the likes of Ross Barkley and other players, Ericsson went from Spurs to Spain last year, or Spurs to Italy last year. Once you're in the last 6 months of your contract, the transfer fees tend to fall substantially. So by extending Jesse Lingard's contract, and I think they've done the same with Phil Jones, they're still hoping to get a half-decent fee for these players who are actually probably younger than we realise. There's never a right answer for, you know, when you've got a player who's, for whatever reason, not going to be playing on a regular basis, and they're in that last 6 months of the contract. Manchester United tend to extend contracts. West Ham have taken the opposite approach.
Yeah, one of the funniest rants I ever heard in football came from the attendant at the players' car park at West Ham's old ground, who just went absolutely bonkers as yet another squad player came in driving a giant SUV. And he just went, Billy Bond's could have got 2.5 cars in that space. So, I don't know where I'm going to fit them all in. They're all just, why can't three of them come in the same car? It was very funny. Phil Shortland has a question which is pertinent to, I'm guessing, a lot of our listeners, Kieran. Phil says, do you have an overview on what clubs are doing with season ticket receipts during the pandemic? There seems to be a range between keeping all the money and offering full refunds. Or there's the Palace way, which is offering refunds, absolutely 100% definitely in your bank by the 15th of December. Cross my heart, Kev. Still waiting. So it's, I know we've discussed this at various stages during the pandemic, but what is your overview on what clubs are doing?
Philip has intimated, there is a huge range. Some clubs have not asked for any payments from fans because they were uncertain that they would be able to offer them any tickets this year. We've seen some clubs take the full money and then start to offer. I know at Brighton we've been given 75% refunds, and they've said the rest. If you're applying for tickets, you know, because we did start playing a couple of matches, we'll effectively just take, I think it worked out as cost me 27 quid coming out of the remainder of the money that was due back to me. So that, you know, to me, that seemed okay. Some clubs seem to have taken money and are being very, very slow in terms of the returns. And I know, again, Sheffield Wednesday, there's been issues there, and they say that they've been overwhelmed with the number of people. And it will arrive shortly. The trouble is, the word "shortly" is not defined in law, so you can understand some fans getting a little bit irate. Other fans are saying, "Well, you know, we understand that that clubs are in a very precarious financial position." So it does really vary depending upon the cash position of individual clubs. Some are in a stronger position than others. You know, if we've got Chelsea, who are bankrolled by Abramovich, they're in a much stronger position than other clubs in the Premier League and the EFL.
To be fair to Steve Parish and Palace and other club owners, when the new season started around September, it was a time of optimism, and it was a time when the government were indicating that they expected fans to be allowed back in shortly. So it wasn't a massive stretch of the imagination to think that your money would be, you know, used to watch football games. And then Palace very quickly offered refunds. But part of the problem is, as with a lot of clubs, they almost gave us too many options. It's like you could have the money yourself, or you could offer it to the academy or to the foundation. And I think people were slightly confused by that. But most clubs, I think, Kieran, on the cursory research I've done, have tried to do the right thing and acknowledge that people are struggling financially and that you will get the money. But as you say, if you've suddenly got 16,000 people asking for a proportion of money back, that's difficult. And also, I think other clubs, I mean, Palace are doing it. I think the first four games they're refunding, then waiting to see what happens before they decide what to do with the rest of the season, which, again, is not unreasonable.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we are still watching football. I appreciate we're watching it on television. And for that, you're going to need potentially a Sky subscription, an Amazon Prime subscription, a BT subscription. But they're not getting the same amount of money coming in. Players haven't taken pay cuts in the main. I think Arsenal are one of the very few that have done so in the Premier League. So, you know, the costs are still there. They've got COVID testing twice a week. It looks like some of the players are doing the COVID testing at New Year's Eve parties, sadly.
Yeah, was it? Yeah.
Which doesn't help football, things of that nature. We know it's a high-profile industry. So if you're going to do things like this, don't have your photograph taken with a group of other people. It beggars belief at times.
Do you know what, Kieran? I thought Palace's apology and Roy Hodgson's apology about Luka Milivojevic mixing with Mitrovic on New Year's Eve was a very good apology, but I would have taken it slightly more seriously if we'd actually dropped Luka for the game yesterday. I think that would have made more of a gesture, to be honest. I understand that Luka wanted to be with people who spoke his language on New Year's Eve. Of course I do. We understand why anybody wants to break the rules, but I think for a high-profile Premier League club, I would have slept easier if they said, no, we're dropping Luka for this game, even though he tested negative apparently on the morning of the game. But still, I think the apology would have had more impact if we'd said, we'll drop him. Also, he's not been playing that well, so it would have been quite needful. let's be fair.
It was a cracking goal from Ezo, though, wasn't it?
Wasn't it a good goal? We weren't going to talk about football, Kieran, because it means I have to acknowledge through gritted teeth that your comeback was really good, which was at half-time, I thought I was on for the proper double. Palace winning unexpectedly and then you getting battered. But no, it was a great goal from Eze. But as usual with the BBC, it won't appear on match the goal of the season or indeed goal of the month. But yeah, Dan Burns is probably having a little sleep today, I imagine, as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I wouldn't be opening up his social media accounts if I was him.
Happy New Year from the sponsor of this episode of The Price of Football, our below-the-waist grooming partner, Manscaped. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels and is here to help you have clean balls in the new year. Kieran, I think both of our balls are clean all year round, but it's essential that they're clean for the new year, Kieran, isn't it?
It certainly is, Kevin. It is New Year. I've just been taking down the Christmas decorations and I've noticed that all my baubles are smooth from the Christmas tree, so I've decided to replicate that with my own. And I couldn't do that unless I'd manscaped here to give myself a New Year's resolution that I fully intend to keep, and I'd recommend our listeners consider this as well. If you go for the Perfect Package 3.0, it's for below-the-waist activity, and it will help you start off the year pretty strong. And you'll get the Lawn Mower 3.0, which is your trimming device that will help you to come out of quarantine with cleaner balls. And if you're worried and if you've not done this type of thing before, I fully understand. It's waterproof, so you can do it in the shower, and it's skin safe. So yeah, if you're worried about nicking your two best friends, rest in peace on that. It's got a third generation trimmer, so if you're going for careful grooming down there, it even shines a light. And shining light on your testicles in 2021 could be one of the most exciting things we do during quarantine. So I thoroughly recommend that. And if you want to freshen things up down there, they've got the Crop Preserver. It's an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturiser. And if you want the for freshness down there, we've got ball toner spray, which these guys have referred to as the crop reviver. So start the new year with a fresh set of testes, thanks to Manscaped.
Well said, Kieran. If you or a friend want the besties for your testes, go to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping using the code PRICEOFOOTBALL. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Go. That was a little word from our sponsors, Manscaped, and it's very lovely to have them back, Kieran. Although I would like to point out that your nether regions can be hairy and clean. That's the look I go for. Our first question.
Like the hair on top of your head, really, isn't it?
Of course it is, Kieran. Yeah, there's all sorts of parallels to be made. And Aaron Dixon gets the privilege of being the first question after a Manscaped ad of 2021. Aaron, if you thought that your name starting with two A's made you a shoo-in for first question of the year, I apologise. Producer guy doesn't work like that. Aaron's question is quite a simple one. Is the Leeds United Adidas deal UK-specific? Because there seems to be no mention of Leeds on other Adidas sites outside the UK.
No, it is a global deal. I think the problem is that if you look at a company which is as big as Adidas, if they are looking to stock kits, and they remember they do many club kits in different domestic countries, and they do many types of international kits. So yeah, the Germany kit, the France kit, and so on, the Belgium kit, those will be stocked in many different countries. I don't want to disrespect Leeds because they do have a very good fan base and they do have a very international fan base, but if you are looking at this from a logistics point of view, and let's say that you are the Thailand branch of Adidas, what you need to have is every kit size, and you need half a dozen of each as a bare minimum. So you've got boys, small, medium, large, extra large, 2XL, and so on. So you need the whole range of sizes. So that's going to need you 40 or 50 shirts. Are you going to sell that? And you've got the other shirts, which are for more high-profile clubs who are in the Adidas canon that are flying off the shelves. So it's simply a reflection that whilst domestically, I think Leeds United have a fantastic fan base from a kit manufacturer's point of view, that doesn't necessarily translate into bigger numbers in terms of the global market. And unfortunately, if you are if you are in Thailand or Australia or even in the US, I used to travel all over the world on a regular basis teaching before COVID, and I'd go into sports stores because it's you're hoping to see things. There's not a lot of in the US. There's not a lot of shirts for football because they've got their domestic sports. Yeah, they've got the basketball shirts. They've got all of their sort of running gear and other sports. So therefore, they're actually quite fussy as to what they do show. And it will be Manchester United, and it will be Milan, and it will be the other major clubs as well. And Leeds aren't quite there yet in terms of market penetration.
Well, someone's going to get tweets from Leeds fans tomorrow, isn't he? And it won't be me because I kept silent throughout that thing. But well done again because you used the word penetration and you carried on like an adult. unlike me, of course, who pointed it out. Simon West, happy new year, Simon. Simon West has a new angle on a recent subject of discussion. And Simon points out quite rightly, a lot more transfers are being made with staggered payments. And this got Simon wondering, what happened to those payments if the buying club then sells the player before those payments are due? So do they just pay them as planned or can they be part of the new transfer deal? So I suppose an example of that would be when Man United bought Aaron Wan-Bissaka on instalments from us. If they'd sold him to Barcelona before they paid, they paid us the last instalment rather, which is just an example, what would then happen? So that's quite an interesting question, actually.
Yeah, this would very much be determined on a contract by contract basis. If I was the legal representative of Palace when they were selling Wan-Bissaka, I would have made sure that I'd inserted into the contract a clause is that should the player be sold before the final payment is due, then that that payment automatically crystallizes at the date of sale to Barcelona or Real or wherever he ends up. So here, I think a good lawyer would ensure that the initial club gets some of the benefits of a subsequent sale, but it's not guaranteed. There's no such thing these days, I think, as a standard contract. If you do ever get to see football contracts in terms of player sales, and a few agents send me them at times, they go on, and they are very detailed. But I think, you know, and any club that is selling a player, especially if it's a young player, a player who is likely to appreciate in value, would insert that as a standard clause.
Now, we talked, Kieran, very early on in this pod, the first pod of the new year, about Sunderland and the size of Sunderland. And Tom Williams has a really interesting question, I think, and it's an angle we've not fully explored. Tom Williams says, as a Sunderland fan, we are frequently told by our owners that we have the biggest budget in League One. However, with a 48,000-seater stadium, we clearly also have the biggest costs. So with COVID, match day costs are being saved, but there's an option worldwide for fans to watch the game for £10. Could it be that for a club with a fan base the size of Sunderland, we could therefore actually increase match day income, because you're not, you know, having the match day cost, stewards, police, catering, etc., but you could sell 100,000 £10 tickets a game, couldn't you, and therefore make money?
In theory, I'd agree with Tom. In practice, if we take a look at iFollow, remember that £10 includes VAT, so you knock off the VAT. Then the EFL are entitled to a share for their organisation. I don't think the clubs are making £10 per ticket. And remember, when you are watching one of these matches on television, it's £10 for everybody that's watching that screen. So if I was a Sunderland fan based in the US, at where they are, let's say, slightly more relaxed with regards to social gathering than we are here in the UK, I'd have all my fellow Sunderland mates around, and we'll all watch it around one person's house. Mm. You know, you could even do that in the garden if you want to do a bit more social distancing and things of that nature. So to actually sell 100,000 passes for matches that are taking place in League One, I think would be quite challenging. But we have seen, certainly some of the clubs that have big away followings, such as Sunderland, Portsmouth, Ipswich, if you drop into League Two, the likes of Bolton and so on, they've actually made quite decent amounts of money when their teams have been playing away, because the fans who would normally turn up for a home match, they say, well, we will pay a tenner. And remember, we've sort of said in general, the away team tends to get a slice of the money if they sell more than 500 tickets for these iFollow arrangements. So there is some money to be made, but I still think it will be substantially less than from physically hosting a game, because yes, there will be some cost savings, but remember, you've still got to go and pay to mow the grass, you've still got to go pay to have sort of COVID protocols as the players come in and out, you've got to pay for the electricity, for the floodlights and things of this nature. So the marginal costs which are being saved are perhaps not as great as people realise, and clubs make a lot of money from hospitality on match day. You know, Sunderland is the Stadium of Light is a relatively modern stadium. I mean, I can remember going to Roker Park.
Well, it was cold up there, wasn't it?
It was cold. Not as cold as Oldham. Oldham, for me, is still the worst.
Oldham fans claim it's officially the coldest ground in the country. How they work that out, I don't know, but it's a proud boast, and I'm not going to deny them that.
Well, on anecdotal experience, I'd agree with them, because it's not sheltered, shall we say, especially in the away end.
Yeah, the problem is though, Kieran, that us fancy Dan Southerners used to turn up at away games here in t-shirts, didn't we? That's because nobody told us it got colder the further north we went, and we never learned.
Well, it's the alcohol overcoat. Yeah. That you're relying on for 90 minutes, and sometimes that doesn't last long enough, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'd still vote Carlisle as the coldest.
Right, yes. Yeah, I've been to Carlisle in August, and that was that was grim, even though we won 3-0.
Yeah. Did we ask that? Yes, we answered that question.
Yeah, we did. So,
question. But theoretically, he's if you could sell 100,000 £10 passes a game, theoretically, it's Tom's actually quite right, isn't he?
Yeah, I think it will be a challenge to sell that number of passes because there are ways around it, shall we say. Everybody knows that you can get these things pirated and things of this nature, which is something we don't condone. And also if you're looking at it from an international perspective, if I'm a football fan in the US, I can get an NBC Gold pass for, I think it cost me $50 a year. It's very, very cheap. So why pay £10 a match to go and watch matches from two divisions further down the table?
Now, our final question today comes from Matt Shepherd, and it's a two-part question. So well done for paying attention, Matt. I've said recently that it's always a good way of getting a question asked, a two-parter. The question is about footballers' wages, and it takes us right back to show one, Kieran. Because Matt says, as players' wages are always quoted on a weekly basis, do they actually get paid on a weekly basis? And the second part of the question, is there a benefit to clubs from a cash flow perspective in paying out a huge amount of wages weekly rather than a colossal amount of wages once a month?
This does go back to our sort of very first show when we discussed this very issue. This is a cultural and historical issue in terms of football in this country. When football turned professional, it was to allow club owners to take working men out of the factories on a weekly basis. So therefore, they were replacing people who had historically been paid weekly for working in remember, football really started in sort of the northern working class industrial towns. It was taking them out of the factories and bringing them in to play football. So therefore, they had to go and pay them weekly because they would have simply refused to have waited a month. And it's also a sort of from a cultural point of view, it's reminding us as football fans that we are oiks and we are blue collar.
Yeah.
Blue collar people get paid on a weekly basis historically, although that doesn't tend to be the case as often these days, of course. And middle class white collar people have salaries instead of wages, and salaries are paid on a monthly basis, and salaries are quoted on an annual figure. So we talk about how much the chief executives of football clubs earn, and we talk about Daniel Levy getting £7 million from Spurs in 2019 as his annual. We don't talk about Harry Kane's annual salary. You say, well, Harry Kane's on £250,000 a week. It's this constant, very subtle, slightly insidious reminder of you are working class background people in the main, and we're going to keep reminding you of doing that. So that's why they tend to be quoted in wages. Physically, they are always paid on a monthly basis.
Right, okay.
I can confirm this having spoken to a number of clubs, because it's a lot easier to do a monthly payroll than a weekly payroll. From a cash flow point of view, it really doesn't make a huge amount of a difference, because if we take a look at the main sources of revenue for clubs, we've got broadcast income, which is paid two or three times a year. So there's a big amount that paid in the summer, and there's a few top-ups over the year, and then there's a final payment based on the number of times you've been on TV and your final league position. So the money coming in is erratic. We've then got ticket sales. Well, ticket sales tend to be an awful lot in advance as well. You think about when you pay for your season ticket, most people pay for that in advance, or they pay on a direct debit on a monthly basis rather than a weekly. So therefore, that sort of matching money coming in and out. Sponsors tend to pay in two or three installments over the year. So again, it doesn't really make a difference if clubs are paying wages weekly. So there's no major cash. There's a tiny cash flow advantage for anything when you spread things in four instead of one, but that's probably offset by the fact that you'd have to run payroll on a more regular basis anyway.
Well, thank you for listening, everybody. If you've got any questions for next Monday's questions pod about the price of football or the salary of football, it's questions@priceoffootball.com, and we'll be back on Thursday with our first news pod of 2021. But if you're a Charlton fan, you can ask a question on Thursday, because we will be talking to club owner Thomas Sangard, which is an interview it took some time to arrange, not because he didn't want to do it, he was very keen to, but just getting a convenient time for him rather than us. But we thought it would be easier to ask Charlton fans to ask Thomas Sangard questions rather than us asking the usual things about his favourite fruit and where he's from, etc. So, again, that's questions at priceoffootball.com. And I'm looking forward to that interview, Kieran, as much as any interview I've looked forward to, because that's a situation that really needs unravelling, and that will genuinely be straight from the horse's mouth, won't it?
Yes, yes. I think Charlton have had a roller coaster year in so many ways. We've seen the good and the bad of football, but it does seem that Thomas has now got his feet under the table. So I think it will be fascinating to hear what he's got to say. And if you get those questions into us, ideally by Tuesday night, because we'll be recording the show on Wednesday, I think, to go out on the Thursday. That would be absolutely cosmic.
Yeah, and also I'm looking forward to finding out whether he sounds as cool as he looks.
He does look so rock and roll, doesn't he?
All right. Stay safe, everybody. Happy New Year to you all.
Bye, kids.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.